Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another Geek Town Behind the Scenes. I'm your host Dave Elliott, and this week we go behind the scenes with composer Jefferson Friedman. So Jefferson is a multi-award winning classical composer, but back around 2014, he made the switch from writing straight classical music to move to LA and become a composer for film and TV as well. Since moving to LA, he has worked on things such as the DC Powerless series, which ran on NBC in the US. He also worked on the Netflix series Wet Hot American Summer. But the things that we're here mainly to talk to him about are two shows which I absolutely adore. New Amsterdam, the medical drama, which runs on Amazon Prime over here, and the DC Universe animated Harley Quinn series, which hasn't aired here yet. And at the time of the interview, it hadn't actually been picked up. Now we know it is coming to E4. I have seen the first episode of it. It is hilarious and one of the best depictions of Harley Quinn you will ever see. It's going to be so worth watching when it eventually lands on E4. It's a much more adult take on Harley Quinn than we've ever seen before. I love the animation style. I love the voice. It's just brilliant. New Amsterdam, as anybody who's listened to the show on a regular basis knows, I absolutely adore that medical drama. It's really good. That's the one that starred Ryan Eggold. And we've interviewed the cast for that before, which you can find back on previous podcasts if you want to go and listen to those. In addition to the Behind the Scenes podcast, we do, of course, do Geek Town Radio, which is our weekly TV, gaming and film show. You can go and listen to that. That comes out on a Tuesday. The Behind the Scenes podcast comes out later on in the week. You can go and find all of this stuff on the Geek Town Radio feed on various podcast apps, or you can go to the website at geektown.co.uk. Here's the interview with Jefferson Friedman, composer on DC Universe's Harley Quinn and New Amsterdam.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Thank you for coming on. It's sure. Lovely to have you to chat. It's interesting with you because, you know, I've interviewed quite a lot of composers at this point. And, you know, the first thing I do is go to the IMDb page. And usually when they're on reasonably big shows like New Amsterdam or like the new Harley Quinn series, there's this whole list of credits where they did time doing kind of, you know, grunt work for somebody else. Like,
yeah.
And you get to yours and there's like straight in there with like TV movies. And then, so what is your background? Because you started out sort of having a very successful career in classical music, didn't you?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I paid my dues for 20 years in classical music in a certain sense. That's not saying that just because I was a prominent classical music composer means anything in this town. It doesn't.
No. But,
obviously, when I came here, let's see, I'm 45 now. So I came here when I was like 38 or so. I was coming from a very different place than a 22-year-old who just graduated from USC.
Yeah.
And, you know, being 38, I've made connections along the way. And so I had a few friends out here who were pretty prominent in composing, and they helped me get my footing out here.
Yeah.
So that's really basically the story.
Yeah. What prompted you to make the change from doing straight classical stuff through to actually doing film and TV?
Well, if you want some real talk, I was totally miserable.
Right.
So, you know, when you're in your 20s and your 30s, you can counteract the pain and loneliness that comes with being a classical music composer
right.
with like youthful adrenaline and energy. But then you get to your late 30s and you sort of like lose that compensating factor. And then you're just sad and lonely and depressed. And I was like, this is not fun anymore. And this is not healthy for me.
Yeah.
And then I got nominated for a Grammy and came out here for the ceremony and stayed with my friend Craig Wedren, who I write New Amsterdam with.
Right.
And we put out a record together. I was in his band when I was 24. We have a long history with each other.
Okay.
And so I came out here for the Grammys and I stayed in his house. And I was like, wow, he's got an amazing setup here. He's got a beautiful house in Hollywood. He supports his family and writes music and seems happy, gets to collaborate with cool people. And so I was like, well, I'm going to give it a shot. You know,
yeah.
I came out here with a suitcase and a dream and it seemed to work out.
We're definitely a good move, I think.
Yeah.
It's weird. I mean, you know, as I say, I've interviewed quite a few composers and they come from all sorts of different backgrounds, but it's the same sort of thing with the guys that are in rock bands. They
sure.
get to about 30 and it's like, oh, I don't want to be doing this touring stuff anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it takes that kind of like it, to do something that you have to be that personally dedicated to, that takes like every ounce of your soul. Not to say that I ever phoned it in for film and TV, but
no,
I'm helping someone else's soul get
yeah.
out here. But once you get to a point where it's just like, it takes so much energy to be in charge of the show when it comes to music, whether it's a rock band or jazz musician, classical composer, anything like that. It's like, so then you're like, well, I can either move to Oregon and run a little antique store or like, you know, try to make this work in some other way with like all the training that I've had.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think that was moving to LA was probably the better decision after that.
Yeah, it seems to have worked out okay.
Yeah, yeah, it seems to be doing well. Well, I mean, the new show that you're on at the moment, or I guess will have finished by now from your point of view, but Harlequin.
Actually, we still have a few more episodes.
Okay.
We're still working on it.
Okay. So Harlequin, which is a DC Universe show in the US. So yeah. I have seen the first episode of it. It's brilliant.
I love the show.
Just hilariously funny.
Agree.
And it's a very different version of Harley than we've seen, I think, anywhere. So I really enjoyed watching it. Presumably that came to you because you worked on Powerless previously with the same guys.
Exactly. We worked on Powerless together and we, you know, just really connected personally and creatively. And actually, when we were at the final mix of the final episode of Powerless, I guess it was like almost 3 years ago now, Pat, one of the showrunners, just mentioned to me that they were developing this Harley Quinn show. And I was like, well, I'm available. And he's like, yeah, we'll call you. Don't worry. And so then, you know, when it came time to actually start working on the music, obviously they hired me and the rest is history.
Yeah. And when it does come to approaching the music for something like Harley Quinn, I mean, it's this bonkers mix of kind of orchestral stuff. And then you've got like punk rock and all sorts of other things mixed in there. So where do you start when you're trying to approach the music for this?
Well, there are two ways in which you start. One is which my own personal process, and then also like a collaborative conversation with the creators. So when they told me 3 years ago that they were doing this Harley Quinn show, like I've spent the last 3 years sort of periodically thinking about the show and thinking about what I would want the music to sound like. Right before we started the post-production process, I sat down with Pat and Justin and Dean, the three people who brought the show to life. and Jen Coyle, who's the lead animator. Right. And we sat in a room together and we just talked about what we wanted the palette of the music to be. And I threw out some ideas and they basically bit on all of them. And we were like very much on the same page as to what we wanted it to sound like. And yeah, it's all over the place and it is bonkers. And that's because so is Harley, you know, I mean, like, it's just, you know, the producers, I've seen interviews with them where they say the show is kind of like the way Gotham looks through her eyes, right?
Yeah.
And so like, she's kind of an unreliable narrator in that sense. And so, you know, the sort of scattershot bonkers nature of the music is meant to like be like the soundtrack going on in her head, you know, like, you know, the way she interacts with the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you a fan of the DC stuff before?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, I grew up a nerd. And so along with that comes, or I guess a geek is probably better for you, right?
Yes.
And along that with that comes like reading comic books, of course.
Yeah.
I had a few friends who were like really, really into comic books. I can't pretend that I was a super fan of comic books, but I read plenty when I was a kid and obviously kept up with everything because I had a couple nerd/geek friends who are big comic book fans.
So when it came to this, did you look at any of the comic book stuff for reference to get some influence for the characters, or look at any of the, because there have been other animated things obviously and live action, so
sure.
Did you look at any of that?
Well, I mean, I'm like super aware of all the DC universe and I've seen like most of the stuff, and in fact I just did an interview yesterday where I remembered I've logged so many hours on those Arkham games. You know, all the DLC, there's like a Harley Quinn DLC and like, you know, there's like deep cut characters in those games, just like in Harley Quinn, the show. So like, you know, even though I wasn't like a super fan of DC because I played those games so much, like I knew who Killer Croc was. I knew who King Shark was, all of these like minor characters. And so I think that's honestly where my deepest education of the DC universe came from. But right. Of course, I've seen all the Dark Knight movies. I saw Suicide Squad. You know, I used to watch Batman the Animated Series, and so, you know, I've known about Harley Quinn the character for a long time.
Yeah, of course. When you're writing the music for the show, I mean, obviously there's a sort of overall kind of idea for it, but are you writing individual themes for the characters as well?
Yeah, it was very important to me for every character to have a very recognizable theme.
Right.
Because it's a cartoon, and I think it's kind of expected that the music works that way.
Yeah.
As opposed to, let's say, New Amsterdam, the other show that I work on, where it's much more abstract. Like, you're not going to have a character, a distinctive theme for each one of the doctors. But, like, Batman needs to sound like Batman, and the Joker needs to sound like Joker. And so it was very important to me to make sure that those are all separate from each other and they're only used for those characters to really like heighten the definition of the characters.
I mean, it makes sense certainly for an animated show, and they are so distinctive as well, those characters. So,
well, thanks.
The themes are just great. So are there any particular instruments you're settling on for that you find suit particular characters more than others?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's sort of where I start the process, is coming up with the sound for the character. Joker, I spent a lot of time coming up with his like off-kilter, out of tune sound for the carnival aspect of his music, the sort of like jingly jangly stuff. So just finding that, dialing in that particular sound, then that affected the notes and the rhythms and all of that stuff. Same with Harley, obviously, you know, the punk rock stuff affects. So let's say for Harley, right? She has two costumes. She has the Harlequin costume, and then she has the more Suicide Squad era punk look.
Yeah.
And so her music is a combination of that. So it's like that carnival stuff mixed with punk rock. And that's more of like inspired by the costume design more than anything else. You know?
Right.
So inspiration can come from all sorts of different places, or like Aquaman, who will be in like two episodes later. You know, I wanted it to sound like his theme was ancient Roman, because like he's from Atlantis.
Yeah.
And also has like an underwater aspect. How do you make music sound like it's underwater? You know, I don't know. That's just that comes with like, you know, 30 years of experience. And then you just sort of use your intuition and feel it, you know.
What was the most challenging thing working on a show like that?
I love the show so much. Like, I would be a super fan of this show if I wasn't working on it. And again, like going back to what I was saying about being a classical composer and really dedicating your whole creative output to it. Because I love the show so much, like, I feel personally invested in this show in a way that maybe on some other projects that I've worked on, I didn't feel as connected to.
Yeah.
Which means that I do have to like expend that extra creative energy in order to make everything like exactly the way I want it.
Yeah. I know this is like asking you to pick one of your children, but do you have a particular favorite bit or theme from the show?
I mean, exactly. It's like choosing a kid. And I honestly change my mind every day, you know, or whichever cue I'm working on. But like, I really like Poison Ivy's theme was the hardest theme for me to come up with.
Right.
And I think it's one of the ones that I'm most proud of, because she's such a tough nut to crack in the way that she's depicted, because she's a super powerful super villain, but also is like this emo girl. Like, so how do you reconcile those two things with one another? And it took a lot of work to get that sound exactly right.
Plus, it has to sound like plants. So no, I'm not sure how you do that.
Oh yeah, no, there's a huge organic part to her. I mean, that was the first, that's where I started. I was like, okay, her theme needs to sound organic somehow.
Yes.
So there's all this texture in her theme that sounds like insects or birds chirping, or, you know, it's a subtle thing, but it sort of creates a background in the same way that like, you know, an animator will draw the background of a thing that the audience doesn't necessarily consciously look at unless they're super into animation. But it creates this sort of canvas on which the scene is played. So it's the same thing with writing a theme like that, or music in general.
Yeah, yeah. As I say, I've seen the first episode of the show. I love it. I think it's brilliant. But the other show that you're working on as well is New Amsterdam, which I'm a huge, huge fan of this show. I don't do that many medical dramas, but New Amsterdam, I just really love. I think it's really unique in how they put it together, and interesting and different, and it actually airs on Amazon over here.
Oh, good.
It's dropped on as a box set, so we've got like the first 9 episodes, I think, at the moment, or whatever the first half of the season was.
Gotcha.
You're working on this with your friends, so there's two of you working on it. I mean, you couldn't really have two shows that are more polar opposite, really, I wouldn't have thought.
It's true. It's true.
It's a really kind of interesting score, because it's not like you'd expect sort of this to be more classical based, because I guess because it's medical but it isn't that. It's, well, I mean, how would you describe the music for this?
Well, the brief that we got, which is the brief that you always want from your executive producers when we first started putting the sound of the show together, was make it weird and special and different and unexpected. So, I mean, that's what you want as a composer, is to be given like free rein to indulge in stuff. And then honestly, you're going to go too far. And then because it's still a network television show, and then you dial it back a little bit, and there are things that the producers latch onto and other things that are just too far. But yeah, so it was like really unique for a network show to give the composers that kind of control over the music, or the ability to sort of expand the idea of what the music in a medical drama sounds like. But I think New Amsterdam overall is kind of like redefining what a network medical drama is, you know. It's like political in a way, but not, doesn't bash you over the head, but certainly like talks deeply about social issues, and there's more of a focus on the patients than there are in previous medical dramas, which are generally about the struggles of the doctors. But I like how they focus on the patients more and make it more about about the medicine, I guess, you know?
Yeah, I think it's really unique and different, that show. It's really quite interesting. And having Stranger music to go with it, I think is entirely appropriate. There was an episode I was watching, I'm a little bit behind, so I'm on episode 5 at the moment because it only went on fairly recently onto Amazon. I think it was episode 5 anyway. There is a really interesting set of cues in that, which are purely drums throughout the entire cue.
Yeah, which one is that?
I think it's the Carmen line, which is the one with the cancer patient. They've said that they won't cover surrogacy.
Oh yeah, you mean the one with the like 5-minute long set piece at the beginning with Bloom in the ER? Is that the one you're talking about?
No, that's the one after it. That's the church van one, isn't it? That's
yeah. Church van.
So yes. I think it's the one before that where Max is basically running around the insurance company to try and get them to...
Oh, yeah, right. I remember. Yes.
In that episode, there are some purely drum solo cues.
Yeah.
Which I mean, I thought was really interesting.
I love all that drum stuff. And actually, that's not, I don't write a whole lot of those cues. My job is more of the like 20cc stat. ER room stuff, and then also the kind of like dreamy emotional piano stuff.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, I think all that jazz drum stuff works fantastic for the show. It just feels like New York and gives it kind of it uplifts the show, you know.
So is it a case of when you're working together on something like that, there are certain cues where you look at and go, well, like this fits me better, or that fits him better, or, you know, so is that how you divide it up?
Yeah, I mean, it's fluid and also depends on the show, but there's, like in this case, we sort of went to our separate corners when we were building the sound of the show and then cross-pollinated everything. So even though I don't generally work on those jazz cues, like I sometimes do, and even though Craig usually doesn't work on the ER scenes, he sometimes does. And we both kind of split the devastating emotional yeah. piano cues between the two of us, because that's kind of both our natural state as composers. Like that feels, yeah. I think, more natural to both of us. Or the most natural to both of us.
Yeah, the episode after that does have that quite long opening piece with which is set in the ER.
And that was mine.
Yeah.
And that was one of the hardest cues I've ever written in my entire life. It was just, it's crazy. Like to write a 5-minute long piece, it was almost like writing a ballet scene, a ballet or something, you know?
Yeah.
It really had to have this kind of shape that you aren't usually able to indulge in when you're working on TV. But once again, like that's what you want, you know, like Peter Horton directed that episode and he was very clear about what he wanted for the first 5 minutes of the show and was just like, go for it, you know?
Right. Great. Yeah. Yes. Peter Horton. I've forgotten about that guy. Yes. I used to watch 30 something.
That's right. So did I.
Yeah. As I say, I really like that show. I think it's fascinating, and I like the fact that their approach to music is as sort of as kind of weird and out there as their approach to the show itself, which is great, you know?
Yep.
Speaking of strange things, one question that I always like to ask composers when I have them on is, given that you've been around for a while doing the various music things, are you a collector of instruments? And if so, what's the weirdest thing you've got in your collection?
I want to be a collector of instruments, but one of the things that becomes tough about classical music as you get older is that it doesn't really pay very much money.
Right, yeah.
So it was only pretty recently that I've been in a financial position to start a collection. But one of the percussion instruments we use on New Amsterdam is this Mexican instrument called a charango, which is made from, the originals were made, resonating chambers made out of the shell of an armadillo.
Oh, really?
I want to find one of the real ones so bad. And honestly, it's probably illegal to import into the United States at this point. But, you know, don't send this podcast to any government, any customs official or anything.
Hey, Nate Barr has trumpets made out of human bone. I think you can get away with an armadillo shell.
Right. Exactly.
So, yeah, you've got these two shows running at the moment. Have you got anything else lined up right now?
Not right now. I mean, honestly, working on those two shows is almost a full plate for me.
Right.
Pilot season still exists and is coming up in a couple months. And
that
so hopefully I'll pick up a pilot or two, and hopefully one of those will get picked up, and then we'll take it from there.
Yes, of course, you'll be heading towards that soon. So we've come to the last couple of questions, and these are things that I ask everybody the same thing whenever we have them on. So the first one is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
Watching Succession and Fleabag are the two shows that I'm watching. I've loved Phoebe Waller-Bridge for a long time. I think I first saw her on Broadchurch.
Right, yeah.
And then watched Crashing and thought Crashing was fantastic. And then when it comes to TV shows that I'm really excited about, it usually takes me longer to get around to watching them because I want a moment where in my life where I'm not completely stressed out by other stuff and can focus on it.
Yeah.
And so over the Christmas break, things are a little bit calmer. And so me and my wife sat down or laid down and watched the first season of Fleabag. And we're moving on to season two. And it's just fantastic. I love it so much.
Yeah, it's a brilliant, brilliant show. It deserves all the awards that it's been getting.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely.
As does Succession as well, of course.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Succession is, for me, it's a little bit of a guilty pleasure because it's so over the top.
Yeah.
But I still love it. And I think the score for that is great too.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. And if you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, can be something from the past, something present, or some sort of future genre, what show would it be?
Well, not that I was up for it, but I really, really wanted to get Watchmen on HBO.
Right.
And like, I wasn't in the mix or anything, but when I heard it was in development, I was just salivating over it. And I was like, I would be the perfect composer for this show.
Yeah.
I didn't get it. But yeah, that's the first thing that comes to mind would be Watchmen show.
Yes, we've talked quite a lot about Watchmen, and it was actually we do an awards thing which is voted for by the public, and Watchmen was the thing that came top of the best new comic book TV show. So
yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, and sort of like related to that, you know, I was the biggest Lost fan in the world when it was on. I loved The Leftovers, and so on. It, like, I would love to work with Damon Lindelof one day because I love all his stuff. I think we would really connect with each other.
Yes.
So, you know, hopefully he listens to your podcast and he hears it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we don't know whether he's doing another series of Watchmen or not. I mean, it seems to have been a one-off, but we'll see. Or, you know, whatever he does next. I thought he did a spectacular job with that, so yes.
Fantastic.
Awesome. Well, it's been lovely chatting with you.
You too.
I'll let you go and get back to your day. I hope Harlequin gets picked up because I thought the first episode was brilliant. And I will continue to watch New Amsterdam and be waiting anxiously for the second half of that series to drop on Amazon over here.
Excellent. We're in the throes of the second half of the second season right now, and things are starting to pick up. So.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's such a good show.
Yeah.
All right. I will let you get back to it. We'll have to talk again at some point in the future.
Fantastic. Would love to.
All right.
Bye. Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.